Our modern lives are filled with devices and environments that assume we have all of our senses and full mobility. But for hundreds of millions of people, this is a poor assumption. Globally, a quarter of a billion people have some impairment of their vision, and hundreds of millions more have trouble navigating spaces in ways the rest of us take for granted. How do we design for that large part of the population with varying abilities? Today on What's New? Enabling Engineering. Welcome to another episode of What's New. I'm Dan Cohen. I'm joined today by Waleed Malise, Associate Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering here at Northeastern University. He also leads the Enabling Engineering Group on campus, which designs and builds low-cost devices for those with physical and cognitive disabilities. And on a personal note, Waleed and I not only went to college together, but we were in the same dorm freshman year, so this is a bit of a reunion some decades later. Waleed, you don't look a day older. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dan. I don't know if that's true, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I know that you were trained in some fairly abstract forms of engineering and that you've worked on theoretical aspects of the field like algorithms. What got you interested in helping people with disabilities and to this more pragmatic rather than abstract engineering?
So as you mentioned, I have been working in the area of algorithms for many years. In particular, my work is on the applications of algorithm design. Combinatorial optimization is the buzzword, as applied to a very wide range of engineering, particularly computer engineering problems. This is all about trying to do something as well as possible, as cheaply as possible, optimizing. In the course of doing that work, I've been teaching the senior capstone design courses, where our seniors try to integrate all the classroom learning they've developed over the years into a specific design project. This is a standard sort of project that all engineering schools provide, and I've been doing it for many years. And we had a particular project 5 years ago that really captured the attention and the imagination of a lot of people. One of our students volunteered at a nursing home in Fall River in southeastern Massachusetts, and he got the idea of developing a device for somebody who can't use their arms to feed themselves. You can just imagine that if you can't feed yourself, you're really dependent on somebody else to do that. There's a feeling of lack of control, a lack of dignity that comes from having to rely on somebody else. This is an interesting point that we can touch on, we can come back to later, that we're sometimes solving problems that have been solved already, but we want to provide more independence for somebody. So they developed this project. They built a robotic arm that helps this individual feed themselves without help or with much less help. We went down there, we tested it, we took some video, and the project worked. We got a lot of attention. The press started writing about it. Ultimately, CNN got interested. There was a CNN spot, and we were just feeling like we'd really made a big impact. And then we started getting letters from all over the country and all over the world from people who had seen the stories saying, "This is incredible, you're doing great work," or, "I want one. My father, my grandfather needs this. How can I get one?" This episode got me thinking that we really had found an area of real need in the community. As you know, Northeastern is very focused on practice-oriented education and the community, and it seemed like this would be a great way to express the values of Northeastern, to bring students into these kinds of projects. So Enabling Engineering is a student group created to replicate the conditions that foster the success of that particular project. We took a step back and tried to rethink everything about how our projects work to try to support and kind of nurture these projects and get students involved in that direction. So Enabling Engineering is a student group. It's based within the College of Engineering that matches students with design projects so that they can empower and enable individuals with disabilities and older adults. So that's I would say, this backstory about how we had this activity that kind of went really well, and we wanted to do more of it.
So I want to get back to this incredible interactive process that you have between your students and those who need some new form of engineering for their disability. But for a moment, could you talk a little bit about when you do get a new batch of students, what are the things that you tell them that modern designers may forget about when they are designing for the 90% of us that have abilities that are different than this 10% that really need new forms of design and new devices like this robotic arm?
We tell them a few things. We tell them that, as you mentioned in your introduction, many people are surprised by the number of individuals in the world who have some sort of challenge that they need to deal with. It's by some accounts, depending on the definitions, up to 10% of all Americans have a mild to severe disability. 10% is a significant number, and obviously very worthy of our efforts to address them. We tell them that the individuals we're designing for should not only be kind of the objects of our work, but they should be partners. We want to design with them as partners. So what that means is we don't want to perceive that we are their saviors, that we know what's best and we're giving them something. We want them to be involved in every part of the process. We want them to tell us what they need. We want them to look at what we do and criticize it. And we want them to work alongside with us. And I can go more into that later, that we have a push to actually make sure that individuals with disabilities are part of our design teams. We also tell the students that it's hard to correctly design for somebody with a disability unless you've experienced it firsthand. We've had some great seminar speakers that have allowed our students to sort of simulate having a disability, only using one hand, not using their eyes, to move around campus. So this is another great idea to encourage students to experience firsthand the challenges that somebody with disabilities might have.
Are there basic principles of engineering that are particularly relevant to this field that you can talk to the students about that they can apply in these specific instances to design something new?
I would say that this area, basically the answer to your question, is not very well developed in the standard curriculum of an engineering college. And there is not a body of knowledge that has made its way into the standard curriculum. But obviously, based on the numbers we're sharing, it should be. So this should be larger. I'd say the principles are being client-focused, being need-focused, the idea of a needs assessment. In the health sciences, it's very common that when a clinician encounters a patient, they do a needs assessment. They don't assume they know what's going on. There's a whole process. There's a whole body of knowledge about that. I'd say that the engineering community has not absorbed this idea as fully, and we are working on educating ourselves about the importance of a needs assessment. So that's one example of something, of a design principle. I'd say another example is the idea that there's a design cycle, that you design, you build, you evaluate, you come back, you change, you try again. This has really not been built into the way engineering curricula work. It's more like one shot. In fact, in many engineering projects, there is no client at all. You just design, you write it up, you present, you go on with your lives. So those are two examples.
So let's talk about this interactive process. I think it's really incredible, the participation of the client with your students and with you. How are they first matched up? Where are these people coming from? Are they from letters and emails to you directly? Do you now have a more formal process in place for matching students with potential clients? How does it work?
Enabling engineering places a lot of emphasis on relationships. We are a relationship type organization. We maintain relationships throughout campus and the community that allows these projects to function. The very first part of that process is to maintain relationships with clinicians, teachers, families, students, families of student members who are either have a disability or are aware of disabilities. We now have friends everywhere, and we're constantly talking to them. And we'd like to find out what they do. If they're a teacher, we'd like to find out what services they provide. If they're a clinician, again, what services they provide. We just tell them about our capabilities and ask them to keep us in mind. And typically we'll talk for 10, 15 minutes and they'll say, okay, great, we'll keep that in mind. And just as we're getting off the phone, they'll say, you know, I've always wished we had such and such that does such and such. And then we have a database, we write that down. And I just encourage them, like when they're in the shower, if they come up with something they wish that existed, we want to be the repository of those ideas. So we're very good at keeping track of these brainstorms. We have lists of dozens to hundreds of them. They're not all good ideas, but they're ideas. And that's the first step of the process.
And this is global now, you even have a relationship with an orphanage in Ecuador. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So one of the great relationships we have is with the physical therapy department. We've learned that there's a great kind of synergy between physical therapists, who are clinicians working with people, who are also, they're also interested in devices. So one of the faculty members we collaborate closely with is Professor Lorna Hayward, who for many years has taken her group of physical therapy students to an orphanage in Ecuador, an orphanage specifically for kids with disabilities. They do a lot of the process I just described to you. They go down there, they do needs assessments, they come back and try to build devices for them. You can see a very clear way we can collaborate. We have become their partner in developing the devices that they have decided are needed down there. So they go down there, they come back, they have some ideas, we spend a year building the devices they need, and then they take them back down there, check them out, try them out, come back with feedback, we build something else. I can give you some examples. We built a device called the Sensory Cube. Kids with disabilities often don't get as much stimulation from the environment as they should, as one would like. They asked for some sort of structure that had devices that would help stimulate their vision, their smell, sound, other modalities. The catch is it had to go down there in a suitcase. So we had to build flat panels with different interesting devices attached to them down there. It was all assembled, tested out, and everything didn't work perfectly. Some parts broke. We came back, built another one the next year, took it back down there. So there's been this great connection between the clinicians here, the caregivers in Ecuador, the engineers at Northeastern. It sort of all came together in that project.
It is really remarkable how many of these projects are low cost. I mean, they fit in a suitcase. They are made from basic parts that I think members of our audience could get at a Radio Shack or at a Home Depot. Why that emphasis? Is it transportation or cost-based analysis?
Many of the devices we build can be purchased at very high cost. This market we're designing for, in many cases, is very small. So yes, there's a very large number of people with disabilities, but often we're designing for somebody who has two disabilities. And so that market might be very small. Often an insurance company will not pay an exorbitant price for a device that has such a tiny market. So we are targeting these very small niches. As a result, needs to be cheap because it's not something insurance companies are going to pay a lot of money for. So the low cost, we're a university. We have some very devoted donors who make everything we do possible. And we are incredibly grateful for their support. Their support really allows us to make, we fit within our budget. We work within our budget.
So let's talk about some of these amazing examples that you and your students have done for these niche markets, as you call them, or really they're individuals. I mean, these are in many cases single effort engineering development cycles for some person with, as you noted, maybe more than one disability. Could you give us some examples?
We have a contact with a young man, a teenager, who has cerebral palsy and has limited functionality in his arms and legs. And he has been a very active participant in many activities on Northeastern's campus. His father has figured out that socialization is a very important part of being a young person, as we know, and that he really wanted to find ways to connect his son with those opportunities on campus. So we connected with this boy and learned, part of the process has been to get to know him. And we've learned a lot about him, and something he really likes to do is play video games. The way he plays video games right now is that he has to communicate every move to a caregiver or an attendant. He wants to shoot, he wants to move to the right, move to the left, and that's transmitted through either a switch where he, you know, bumps his head or bumps some other part of his body. You can imagine that there's a separation between himself and the game, having to have somebody else involved. So this is all about increasing independence. I teach a class called Enabling Engineering, which is one of the ways our students get engaged. And one of our students knew the boy and started to build what we call the XMAX controller. It's a collection of switches that go around the back of a wheelchair, and it connects to an Xbox. Basically, it replicates the functionality of an Xbox and basically allows him to control icons in the game. A lot of design decisions had to go into making this happen. Everything from physically the type of switches, where they're mounted, the kinds of connectors, the kinds of games we would support. This has been going on for about 2 years. We're slow moving, but we get there at the end. And at our showcase in the spring, the young man showed up suddenly. We were demonstrating our project. He just showed up with his father. We plugged him in, and he was there playing video games alone for the first time. So it was an incredibly moving moment for the family and for our group.
And it really also has that emphasis that you pointed out at the beginning of independence, right? That so many of these people do rely on a caregiver. They may be getting some of these inputs, but they're separated from the video game or from the hobby or from other aspects of their world. Do you have another example? Blindness, as I mentioned in the intro, is remarkably prevalent, or low vision problems. How are some of your students addressing this problem?
So we have... We're very interested in this area. We have a close relationship with the National Braille Press, which is right near Northeastern. By the way, one of the great side effects of my being involved in this area is I'm meeting all the organizations right around Northeastern, often no more than a few hundred yards from Northeastern, that work in this area. We had a capstone project, one of these senior design projects I mentioned at the beginning, that heard from the National Braille Press that many people with vision impairments are interested in woodworking. There's something about the fact that it's tactile, working with your hands. There's been some development of devices to help people who are blind cut, nail, make decisions, but there was not a level. A level is a device that tells you if an object is flat or can tell you the angle at which it's, you know, positioned relative to something else. So there was no level for people with vision impairments. So we took this on as a capstone project. We worked with National Braille Press for over the course of a year, built a device, and built it. It reads off angles using the students recorded their own voices. It tells you, you know, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, 35 degrees. And you can say, I want it to be 30 degrees. And it'll, you know, you can keep changing it. And when it gets to the right angle, it'll beep. This project is also an example of how Enabling Engineering supports these projects, because our electrical and computer engineering students often don't have all the skills they need to complete a project like this. For example, the enclosure for this project was 3D printed. We have an infrastructure of graduate students from other disciplines who can help support these projects. So in this case, they helped design the enclosure, 3D print it, and kind of supported the project in that way.
Well, that's really impressive. And once again, I think the independence of this, we think about blind people perhaps just getting around in their world, but of course they you know, they've got hobbies, they would like to do everything that sighted people can. And so I think this is a great example of that. Is there a project that you're working on right now that's been particularly challenging? You mentioned that the XMAX game controller for the boy with cerebral palsy took a couple of years. What are you in the middle of right now that you think our audience would be interested in hearing about?
We have had a particular interest in Parkinson's disease. As our population ages, Parkinson's is more prevalent. We've had students working on devices to support individuals with Parkinson's for many years. A common problem is the danger of aspirating fluid while drinking. When we're drinking out of a cup, we raise our, to get the last bit of fluid from the bottom, we raise our head up and drink it. And for a typically abled person, that's okay. Somebody with Parkinson's, we're told, is much more likely to aspirate the fluid and choke. So we've had a group working for many years on a cup that allows you to raise dynamically the fluid up so that they never have to raise their head to drink it. This is not a very complicated idea. They've been through many iterations. They've demonstrated it many times at our showcases. We have been missing a contact to evaluate this and tell us if it works. We worked with a nursing home near Fenway, but those were typically abled individuals. And this project has really been held back by a lack of a contact in the Parkinson's community. So this is really my challenge. I've been constantly over years trying to develop these contacts, and it didn't really come through until just recently. Just in fact, this is hot off the presses. Just this week, we made a contact with the Jewish Family Services Organization in Newton, I believe, who has a large population of elders with Parkinson's, and they're eager to work with us. This is something we found, is that not every organization is equally interested in collaborating on these projects. So one school will be really into it, another school is just, they're just sort of doing their job, which is fine. So we've been looking for these great partners who really are looking for students to come and to work with, and that seems to have been one of them. So that was a recent challenge that we overcame.
And could you talk a little bit about the governance of the student organization itself, the Enabling Engineering organization? It seems very student-driven.
So Enabling Engineering is a student-led organization. It is the students who actually are implementing the day-to-day operations of the group. So everything from keeping track of project ideas, connecting students to projects, meeting with the projects every week, the project teams to find out how they're doing, figuring out what resources they need to complete their designs. They do outreach, fundraising. Really, everything I've mentioned in some way is being implemented by students within the kind of the oversight of the larger university structure. So this is another way in which we are supporting the students. Not only are they getting experience in implementing these projects, they're actually getting management experience in managing kind of a pretty large, complicated organization.
What is it like when you actually deliver the end product to the client, and maybe after several cycles of iteration, and then leave it with them so that you can go off and do new things?
So the output of our work, the outputs are many. So the most direct one is what you mentioned. In the situations where the project has come to the end, we've built something, we deliver it, and it works, and they take it off, that's the best possible outcome. We've made good on our commitment to a client to deliver something that meets their need. We've helped them overcome a particular barrier. So that is incredibly exciting for our students, of course, for me too. Our students come here, our students are not all engineers. They come to Northeastern to pursue whatever they're pursuing. But there's a common element among Northeastern students that they want to make a difference in the world. It's part of the kind of the ethos of Northeastern. So often they find that in their classes, they are not connecting to the community. They're not connecting to practice-oriented education as much as they'd like. So these projects give them a venue, kind of an outlet for that desire. So when it really comes all together, they're incredibly excited. I hear again and again that these projects are the most satisfying thing that they've done. They tell me in their interviews, this is what their interviews are about for job interviews. This is what they're talking about. They change careers, they focus on these areas. So it's really transformative for the students. The other output is in the students themselves. We're a school, so we feel like we're training the next generation of engineers and clinicians to be more aware of disabilities. So it's incredibly exciting to see that change within them and to see that they have this new outlook that maybe they wouldn't have had before.
Right. It seems like just that basic awareness is something that needs to be instilled in all the college students and actually everyone in your field. If we have a member of the What's New audience with a disability or a family member with a disability, how can they get involved, get in touch, let you know about a specific need that they might have?
So we, as you've heard from me, we're very connected to the community. We actively look for connections of all kinds. Our website is enablingengineering.org. It's easy to find. You can also just Google us and we come up at Northeastern University. We are very interested in partnering with individuals with disabilities in a few ways. We're interested in project ideas. We're interested in people who would like to test devices. We have devices in production. We'd love to just come over and show you something and pick your brain. We're also interested in partnering with you in designer projects. Maybe you want to get involved with a team. You could be a mentor, depending on schedules. You could be a mentor. You could come to a showcase and just evaluate things and say, this sounds good. This doesn't sound good. You could, as I mentioned, actually join a team if that works out and actually help the students on a day-to-day basis. Part of the success of Enabling Engineering is that there are many pathways to connect with us, both for students and for non-students. We want to connect with alumni. We want to connect with the community and teachers and clinicians. You can volunteer with us. You can take a course, get course credit. There are a lot of different ways to engage. And that's kind of by being a big tent, so to speak, we've developed a really vibrant community. So I encourage your listeners to reach out to us and get involved.
Great. And we'll include that website in the show notes for this episode of What's New. Waleed, thanks so much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
What's New is a production of the Northeastern University Libraries. It is produced by Thomas Berry and engineered by Jonathan Iannone in Snell Libraries Recording Studios, with assistance from the Libraries podcast team, Evan Simpson, Deborah Mandel, Jonathan Reed, Sarah Sweeney, Brooke Williams, and Deborah Smith. Our thanks to Northeastern's marketing and communications staff, as well as the advice and input from Northeastern's College of Arts, Media, and Design. You can subscribe and check out more episodes of What's New on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on the web at whatsnewpodcast.org. I'm Dan Cohen. See you next time on What's New.